Good morning and welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I'm your host, Sailor Shawnee, and welcome to the show. I hope you all had a wonderful start to the semester, and here's all the news you need to know from the University of Connecticut from this week. Sad news for radio, as AM 1220 WQUN, Quinnipiac University's community radio station, is set to close this summer. Daily Campus staff writer Gabriela De Benedictis reports that the station will air its last show on May 31st and officially close on June 30th. Quinnipiac administrators cited the decline of student engagement and tectonic changes as cause for the closure. Lynn Bushnell, Quinnipiac's Vice President of Public Affairs, says the number of students who consider radio careers or want to intern at the station declined sharply, and that made the university re-examine continuing to operate the station. Petitions have circulated across social media to keep the station running. One petitioner wrote, "The shutdown was a bad decision that hurts town relations, especially the communications of information during bad weather situations or horrible traffic conditions." They also said that the station was useful to Hamden residents living near the university. College graduates with degrees in the science, technology, engineering, or mathematics fields, better known as STEM, could qualify for up to $2,500 in personal income tax credit in the state. Daily Campus correspondent Yunyan Chow reports that the measure would apply to both in- and out-of-state students who get their bachelor's, master's, or doctorate degrees after January 1st of this year. They'd be eligible for a $500 tax credit, which they can claim for up to 5 consecutive years if they are a resident of Connecticut or relocate to the state within 2 years of getting their degree. While some STEM students, like Josie McCormick, think the incentive is a good idea that keeps the option of searching for jobs in the state, others, like Zachary Mangold and Ranu Chowdhury, don't think it's significant enough to promote them to stay in-state. In more legal news, the University of Connecticut's Director of Animal Care Services was fined $400,000 for defamation by a Middlesex Superior Court in Massachusetts. Daily Campus correspondent Taylor Harton reports that Curtis W. Schottelmeyer, who was hired in May 2018, was indicted by a grand jury for photographing a Lexington, Massachusetts police officer after the officer gave him a $40 ticket in May 2014. The charge came after Schottelmeyer took a picture of patrolman John Fisher holding his phone to his ear as he worked the traffic detail and reported it to the Lexington police. The picture later appeared on a 2014 Fox Undercover investigation report called Police Payback. Schottelmeyer made a false statement regarding where the picture was taken and that the ticket was in retaliation for the photo of the officer. He was ticketed for using a handheld device while driving, but claims he wasn't driving when he took the picture. Schottelmeyer's husband, Scott Russian, is also being fined $100,000 for lying about driving the car when his husband took the picture when he was actually in Boston and not in Lexington. A UConn spokesperson said the university is looking into the matter. Some more legal news. An investigation by UConn's Office of Institutional Equity found that marching band director Dr. David Mills, told a student he would spank her. Daily Campus correspondent Luke Hodges reported that while Mills could not recall exactly what he told the female student, he claimed he could have said, "spank her" in a humorous way. The instances were confirmed by Ricardo Brown, an assistant professor in residence and associate director of athletic bands. The investigation began in mid-November of last year and ended on January 25th. It started after the office was informed of a sexually harassing comment towards the female student, as well as using sex-based harassment and discrimination towards her and other female marching band members by Mills on November 12, 2018. There were other allegations against Mill, including one where he told a female student to lay off the preseason plan and order Spanx. While he denied the claim, OIE confirmed the allegation. He also told another student that a graduate who had gotten married had broken a lot of young hearts and that if he were young, he would lust after her. Mills denied saying the latter claim. OIE also investigated the possibility of sex discrimination for tasks and trips. Mills denied the allegation, and OIE did not find him in violation of any university discrimination or harassment policies. However, Mills could have violated code of conduct policies, and the case will be referred to management and human resources. The effects of the government shutdown are felt right here on campus. Students applying for financial aid and research grant applications had to wait until the government reopened to proceed with their applications. Daily Campus correspondent Panina Bede reports students who needed to provide additional documentation to furloughed departments such as the IRS were forced to pause applications during the 35-day shutdown. The shutdown resulted from disputes between President Donald Trump and congressional Democrats who couldn't reach an agreement over funding for a southern border wall. An agreement was reached to temporarily reopen the government for 3 weeks so that an agreement on a federal budget can be reached. The issue for students related to the IRS Get Transcript online tool and section that allows for the access of additional documents were shut down. Other departments, such as Homeland Security and the Department of Justice, have databases that gather information with FAFSA, especially for non-citizen students or those with drug convictions. Now for the weather. For today, Friday, February 1st, it's sunny with a high near 18, and wind chill values as low as negative 10. Tonight, you can expect it to be mostly clear with a low around 6. Tomorrow, Saturday, February 2nd, it's expected to be partly sunny with a high near 32, and by night, it will be mostly cloudy with a low near around 22. That's all the news we have this week. We'll be going into a quick break before heading into our talk segment of the show, where I'll be talking to a special guest about their efforts to launch a new cultural center.
Huskies ready to delve into the world of diplomacy can find a seat waiting for them with the UConn Travel Model United Nations. Get trained in public speaking, negotiation, and networking so you can take on a role in different kinds of diplomacy scenarios, like the UN General Assembly and historical events, like the French Revolution. Hone these skills across the United States at competitive conferences where you can be a diplomat, build professional skills, and travel. Meetings are on Mondays at 7:30 p.m. in Monteith, room 319. And check out tmun.org for more information. You are listening to WHUS Stores.
So what do you want to be when you grow up?
Michael Gibson. Ah!
Hey, what's up? This is Duckworth. You're listening to WHUS Stores. Listen to good music and eat broccoli.
I just want to ride my bike. And if you don't mind, we can ride all night. Talk to me, say I just want to...
Psst. Hey. Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to this radio station, WHUS Stores. There's a chance you're a writer still awake at 2 a.m. trying to find the best way to write that sentence you're struggling with. Which, by the way, if you're trying to write that sentence, just say whatever you're trying to say out loud, and then write that. If you need more tips and tricks, or motivation to keep on writing, I suggest checking out the UConn Coalition of Writers, because hey, we know what you're going through. You can be a poet, songwriter, a playwright, a novelist, a comic book fan, whatever you are, you have a place in our community. Feel free to reach out at UConnCoalitionOfWriters@gmail.com to find out when we meet. Now I've got to get back to writing. You should too.
And we're back. We'll now be moving into the talk segment of our news show. Please note, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the host and guests, and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or license of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. I'm in the studio with Susan Nasri, the president of the fairly new Middle Eastern Student Association. Hi, Susan. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So before we start, do you want to just introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit more about who you are.
Yes, so it's good to meet. First, I'd like to thank you for having me and for giving me this opportunity to speak about my organization. My name is actually pronounced Suzanne.
Suzanne.
Yeah, I recently started going by the actual pronunciation rather than Susan. So I'm from Afghanistan. I'm a junior. I'm a double major in political science and human rights. And any of my free time is usually spent with MESA. So,
all right. So tell us a little bit more about MESA.
Okay. So the organization stands for Middle Eastern Student Association. And this organization became an actual RSO with the university in spring of 2017. So we're extremely new. a lot of this came up with just discussions that I was having along with a few other students. And it was actually one of my close friends, Kasra, who came up with this idea saying, let's have an organization that talks about shared identities and provides a space for us to celebrate and spread our culture while keeping it as inclusive as possible. So we wanted to make sure it was non-political and non-religious. So that's kind of like the mission statement and the basic foundation of our organization.
I think a lot of the times when I talk to people about like Middle Eastern or North African identity, the first thing that comes to their mind is either you're Arab or you're Muslim. So give us a little bit about because you're trying to start a cultural center, which is really what we're going to start talking about. But give us a little bit about some background of what it means, not even what it means, but what is Middle Eastern or North African? What is a part of that identity? What does that identity entail?
So being from Afghanistan, we kind of fall in and out of the map of being part of the Middle East or not. So I'm not considered Arab, but growing up, I was raised with all the same principles and the cultural aspect of the Middle Eastern and North African identity. So I think for me, the identity encompasses a lot of what our culture is based on. So a lot of it's based on hospitality, the Sikh of education, the importance of family. These are things that were so deeply ingrained in my childhood. And I feel like it's so much of an identity that, like, it's shared across the entire region and something that brings us all together.
So tell us a little bit more about the cultural center. Where did that idea come from? How far along are you? Wherever you want to start.
So that also came from, like, the very beginning of when we started discussing what we could do with Mesa. So that being said, there's 5 culture centers on campus. They're all located, obviously, right here in the 4th floor of the Student Union. But as Middle Eastern, North African, South Asian students, we're kind of expected to fall into the Asian American Culture Center or into the African American Culture Center. But the thing is that those places are not meant to encompass our cultures, and they're not spaces that are necessarily designed to celebrate us. That being said, they're very important spaces, and they're great for those populations. But that's not fair to jeopardize another student's experience in their space so that I could also be involved. So that's why I think from the very beginning, we were hoping to start having this cultural center so that it's a space where much of these students who are white passing, like myself, like so that we could have a space where we're recognized, we're celebrated, and it's known that we're on this campus too, and that we're also a marginalized community that also deserves respect and the same rights as everybody else.
You mentioned something interesting. So you're talking about being white passing. So for anybody that doesn't know, I also fall into the MENA American category, and it always surprises me. It surprised me when I found this out, but we're listed as Caucasian. Mm-hmm. So if you're Middle Eastern or North African, for the census, you are Caucasian, which is odd because I'm not white, but nonetheless. So it's an interesting question for me to say, how does your identity sort of fit in when you're not even sort of represented on a census or your identity isn't there? Like, how does that sort of impact someone?
No, that's a completely valid point. Every single time that I have to fill out on a race sheet that I'm white.
Or other. That's right. The other option. Exactly. You either put in white or other.
Yeah, always one or the other. It makes you feel like you don't really belong. Like, you're really not a recognized population. My understanding is there was a time where Middle Eastern and North African immigrants in America wanted to be considered white because it was helping them get employment and education and other things. But it's come to the point where we're kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum, where we want to be recognized for who we are. And my experiences are fundamentally different than a white person's. So that's not fair to me that I have to sit here and be white on a sheet of paper when it's really not indicative of who I am, how I identify, or any of my experiences.
I've heard the phrase when a lot of people talk about this, which is white without the privilege. What is that? Have you heard that? What does that mean to you? Or
I've actually never heard that phrase.
Really?
But I love it.
A lot of people that, at least that I've spoken to, When I found this out, I was in the middle of high school and I had a teacher and I was filling out a form and she was like the only other Arab teacher in the whole class. And I was like, I have this form and it says I'm white. Like, there has to be a mistake. She's like, no, there's no mistake. Like, you're white. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And she sat down and she like explained the whole thing to me. And I was like, she's like, yeah, it's like white without the privilege. And I've heard a lot of people repeat that mm-hmm. over and over, but it's just an interesting way of putting this into perspective.
I completely agree. I think the first time, I've been filling out, like, my school papers for so long. I think it's just, like, what happens when you're a child of immigrants. But I remember one of those forms that I was filling out, I asked my parents, probably, like, 4 or 5 years old, like, am I white? Am I Asian? Like, Afghanistan's in Asia. And my parents were like, oh, well, like, you know, by the census, you're white. And this was, you know, so close to post 9/11. So they were like, you know, just say that you're
just
white.
Go with it, yeah.
And if anyone asks, you celebrate Christmas and your name is pronounced Susan, it's not pronounced Susan, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, growing up, it was kind of like the opposite of the spectrum where it's like, just be as white as you possibly can. Do not raise questions. And now I think for most of my generation, at least, like, we're coming to a point where we accept who we are and we want to embrace that. And it's like, all right, I'm not white anymore. And I definitely don't get those white privileges, so stop calling me that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the effort to actually establish a cultural center. What has that process been like?
Okay, so we first started by just meeting with the directors of the Asian American and the African American Culture Center on campus. Because we fall into their geographic regions, we wanted to hear their perspectives first. And both directors were completely in support, and they like let us know that if there's anything that they could do for us, to definitely let us know. So it started with that. And then afterwards, we met with a few other people higher up in UConn's administration. So we met with the chief diversity officer and I'm forgetting the other person that we met with. And they really pushed us back on this idea. They explained to us that with budgeting, with space, all these other things, that it may not be possible. And I was actually told during one of these meetings, well, as an RSO, you're able to request spaces in the union. Why don't you just request a space every day? And then, like, brown kids can go there and enjoy that space every day. And people make the space. Space don't make people. I was like, no. I will be recognized for who I am. And anyone who walks on this campus should see a center that recognizes who I am. So we received a little bit of pushback, but what we're doing right now is we kind of have just like an Excel spreadsheet where students are filling out their names, their student IDs, if they're an undergrad, graduate student, if they identify as part of this population, and if they support this idea of having a cultural center. So we're picking up meetings again with other directors of cultural centers, student activities, student affairs, anybody else that we could talk to and get more staff and faculty support. Like, that's kind of our biggest thing right now.
I know this is, you said the whole point was it for it to not be political and for it to sort of be inclusive. But I almost kind of have to ask the question of Middle Eastern identity is so wide. And I feel like a lot of the times we don't have the conversations of who's a part of it. So, like, for a lot of people that don't know, the Middle East isn't actually like a legit geographical region. Like, it's just a carved up place. That's not an accurate way of saying it, but basically, it's not even the middle of the East. Like, some guys decided to draw a bunch of borders and call this place the Middle East. And a lot of the borders of the countries there even go, across ethnic and racial and religious lines. So, but I think culturally, we've also come to think of the Middle East as sort of the Arab world or the Muslim world. So how do we reconcile those identities and sort of who gets to say, I'm Middle Eastern? Mm-hmm.
What we've done so far, just with the small amount of time that we've been an organization, is that anytime that we participate in events that involves other student groups, we always make sure to include the South Asian student groups as well as any of the Jewish or Halal groups. And we do this because at the end of the day, geographically, we're all in the exact same place. And if we want to spread this idea of it being non-religious, non-political, it needs to start with us and our actions, and we need to embody those beliefs. So we've always made it a point to discuss it in this way, the space should be open for anybody, anyone who's just interested, anyone who just wants to go to the center for peace, comfort, whatever it may be. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's your identity. And as an exec board, we've tried really hard to make sure that anyone from any part of that region or feels that any part of their identity falls within this region feels accepted and feels welcomed.
So give me a little bit more of, I'm going to backtrack from the cultural center and I just kind of want to talk about MESA. But you guys had a fashion show last semester.
Yes.
What else have you guys done and what do you sort of plan on doing?
So last semester was actually the first semester that we were able to get USG funding and we were finally qualified for it. So that's why we were able to finally host this huge event with all this USG money that we were able to get, thank God. But prior to that, we had a bazaar in spring 2018. So that was held in April. We had it in the Alumni Center. Excuse me, not the Alumni Center. It was Alumni Hall. Is that what it's called?
I'm honest. I don't even live on campus, so
I can't even tell
you.
The green carpet, like that place.
Okay.
The name is completely escaping me, but it was in there. So we had basically all these other student groups that came together and brought different art, brought different boards that were representative of the cultures that they represent. And then we also had all these different students submit art that they felt was representative of the Middle Eastern, like, diaspora population region. So, I mean, we had everything from portraits of the Afghan girl. I don't know if you're familiar who
yes.
that is. Yes, so we had a painting of her, which is absolutely beautiful, and it's sold. We had, like, deserts, rivers that were drawn, again, more people. So it was just trying to show that there's more to the Middle East than just, like, the war. And this idea that it's this war-stricken and impoverished area where women aren't allowed to do things. We were really trying to get away from that idea, and we were trying to emulate all the different cultures while also emulating that shared identity that we have. Like, we're all here in the same space because we're all from here, too.
Do you want to hear a really funny story about sort of like misconceptions about the Middle East?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm half Egyptian, half Yemeni. And for a very long time, I didn't really tell people I was Yemeni because no one knew where it was. And everybody, like, I lived in the Midwest for a while. So everybody was like, oh, Egypt, like, it's awesome. Like, yeah, that place.
The pyramids.
But, yeah. That's the only thing that exists there. But I kid you not, it was 2010. So this is the midst of the Egyptian Civil War. And I just moved to Indiana. I was like the eighth grade. And I walk into a class and this girl asked me, she's like, where are you from? And I grew up in New York, so every time somebody asks where I'm from, I'm like, I'm from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. But
I'm from Queens.
Oh, there's a bit of a run. No, Queen and Brooklyn don't have a lot of rivalry, yeah. But whatever. Brooklyn's still better, but that's a personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, no, like, where are you actually from? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. She's like, your background. I'm like, oh, I'm Egyptian. And I thought this was a joke, but she just stared at me, and she's like, you're Egyptian? Like, you're mummies? And I'm like, no, like, I'm from Egypt. And she's like, Egyptians still exist? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, I thought, like, it was just, like, ancient, and you guys were mummies. And I'm like, there's, like, 80 million of us. Like, no, we still exist.
Yeah,
we're on the news every day.
Country.
So I was baffled because for, like, the first time I realized that, like, one, I don't think everybody in the world or the vast majority of people would be, like, Egyptians still exist.
Right.
But, like, you, like, I think that was the first time that it struck me that there was a huge misconception about what was going on and who it was, especially because we were on the news every day. Like, how did you miss that? But
oh, yeah, you'd be surprised. I think something that, like, our population especially deals with is these microaggressions. And, like, it's so intense, the microaggressions that we feel, because half the time it's never really, like, an explicit or an intentional racism or discrimination. I feel like, I mean, just recently, one of my close friends asked me if Afghanistan was in Iraq. And I was so confused. I was like, these are separate countries with separate wars that have been fought for 17, 18 years. What do you mean is my country inside of Iraq?
I think, so again, like you said, you were a political science and human rights. I'm a journalism political science major. So the vast majority of people that we talk to sort of talk about these issues on a daily basis. But sometimes when you talk to someone who may not be as familiar, who may not follow the news, I think there's this, like, a bit of a misconception. So a lot of the times, like, this is another really weird story, but in the seventh grade, I had someone tell me that because my name was Sarah, that there was no way I was Middle Eastern because my name was Sarah. And I didn't really understand, but this kid went on for 20 minutes, and I was very confused. They're like, no, like, if you're Middle Eastern, then shouldn't your name be, like, Khadija? And I'm like, what do you, first of all, that's racist.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, no. Like, it's a very diverse area, and I'm like, the name itself originates from there. So it always baffles me.
That's so funny because Sarah is the most Middle Eastern name in the world.
But nobody really attributes it as that.
Like, anytime I see Sarah, I'm like, oh, they're going to be from the Middle East. They're going to be Muslim. Like, I'm one of those people that immediately thinks, like, they're probably Muslim.
I don't do that because most of the time when I see Sarah, like, it's so, like, everybody's name is Sarah. Like, even when people call my name in public and they'll be like, Sarah, I just don't turn around because I always assume it's, like, anybody else in the room. And they're like, I was calling your name. I was like, oh. I heard you. I just didn't think it was me.
That was one of the other 10 Sarahs.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's like the other thing about it is that I obviously, like, don't always look Middle East. Like, I can pass as, like, racially ambiguous. So people always have this misconception because, like, Egypt's in Africa, and they're like, but you're not black. My friend's Algerian, and she's half Algerian, half French, but she's very pale. And all the time they're like, there's no way you're African. And she's like, well, I'm Algerian. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. Or people that will, like, I don't know if you've ever experienced this when you talk to someone. Now I'm just rambling. And you'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm from the Middle East. Or, like, I'm from Egypt. They'll be like, I went to Morocco once. Okay.
Oh, my favorite is if I say I'm from Afghanistan, they're like, oh, I have a cousin deployed there. Like, oh, we're on different pages, my friend. Like, this is not common grounds for us to develop a relationship. And there's so many times where they're like, oh, like, I know someone who went on a tour there. I'm like, invasion? Tour? Invasion? Same thing.
No, that is
always.
Are you serious?
And the amount of times you're like, yeah, like Kabul, like my cousin. I'm like
Kabul.
I'm like Kabul. Okay. And I'm just like, yeah, this conversation just needs to die here.
But I have a question. At what point is it a place to sort of clarify misconceptions? And at what point is it sort of like you need to put the steps down and say you're crossing a line that is mm-hmm. far gone?
So I kind of fall on two places in that. I'm always the person who's like, oh, it's not my obligation to enlighten somebody else. Like, it's not my responsibility to help you get out of your ignorance. Like, sometimes I'm like on that, excuse me, I'm on that wave. But more often than not, I think that you can easily tell when someone's questions are out of genuine curiosity, whereas if they have like a preconceived bias, this will come out in their questions. So I think even in the phrasing of questions, like, for example, when my friend asked me if Afghanistan was in Iraq, she was genuinely very confused. Like, I don't know who told her otherwise, but she actually came to me like, wait a second, is your country inside of this country? And it always takes you back and you're just like, I really wish you looked at a map. But I knew she was coming from a place of, you're someone that I trust, you're someone that I know I can be vulnerable with, even if that means I look a little silly, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's very easy to pick up when someone is genuinely curious. They really just don't know. They've only heard things in the media. They've heard things from their parents, their deployed cousin in Kabul, you know. But and then it's very clear to tell when someone's just like, hey, teach me, like, show me, like, I don't know any better. Please help me out.
You mentioned something about like media and representation. How do you think the Middle East is depicted, and how should we be depicting the Middle East, in your opinion? Mm-hmm. We can have all sorts of answers on that.
I think that more often than not, whenever there's a Middle Eastern person on television, it's always the, my parents are crazy people that I have to hide from, and this is my double life and my double identity, because they're crazy and they're Muslim and they're Arab and I can't tell them anything. So more often than that, if it's a female, it's like, this hijabi girl who
is oppressed.
Yeah, she's oppressed. She doesn't know what to do with her identity. Or like there's this male who is confused about religion and whatever else it may be. So, I mean, I think it's time to get away from those narratives. And let's be real, on television, we're always the doctors, the lawyers, and the engineers, too.
But to be fair, when I decided to be a journalist, my parents were not the happiest. They were like, are you sure you don't want to try engineering? My dad actually the other day went to my brother and my sister, and my brother's like, oh, I don't know what I want to be. And so he looks at my sister's like, you just have to go into the sciences. I need one of you in the sciences. I'm like, why? He's like, I don't know why you think journalism is a career. And I was like, because it is.
Right.
But it's not valid because you're not a doctor or an engineer. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say we have a problem with that one.
Oh, no, we definitely do. Even, I mean, to this day, I'm so many years along in my degree and my parents are still like, so
can
are
you apply to law school?
Oh no, they're like, are you sure med school is not too late? Like, yeah. Bio maybe? And they're like political science, biology, like complete opposites.
Yeah. Okay, we're almost out of time, so I'm gonna ask you one last question. If you wanted someone to understand what the Middle East is, what do you want them to know about it?
That's a loaded question.
Middle East and North Africa. Oh, of course. There's no way to talk about this and not have it be loaded.
Okay. There's one thing I want them to know. All right, I'm going to give you two pieces of advice. That's one, right. I would just say that if at any point in your life you're confused or just want to gather information about the Middle East, if you go to someone who you know is a member of the diaspora or an immigrant themselves, more often than not, they're going to open up and tell you a little bit about themselves and give you practical information. So that's just like one piece of like actual advice, like something you can go do. But second, one thing to know about the Middle East, I would say to separate it from like what you see in the media. Like everything that you think is true in the media via like whatever outlets you're watching, if it's on social media, if you have this idea that Islam determines these things or that women are not allowed to do this, like please get rid of any type of preconceived notion that you have and just know that we're all probably more similar to you than you would probably know. So if you just take that time to have that conversation and get rid of these pre-existing ideas, I promise life will go much smoother.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and talking to me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. And thank you to all of you for listening to our show. Thank you to The Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us. And thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Sarah Larshani, and you're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. I wish you all the best of luck. Enjoy the rest of your day.